This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And this is Paul Alexander. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So it is a welcome release for these migrants who have been drifting at sea, waiting for a country to accept them.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome talking about the latest migrant boat crisis.
Also in the news, the International Labour Organization reports 152 million children are victims of child labour, with nearly half forced to work in hazardous, unhealthy conditions.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Spain's Prime Minister has ended a stalemate between Italy and Malta by saying his country will accept a rescue ship carrying 629 migrants. Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez today said, "It is Spain's duty to avoid a humanitarian catastrophe and allow the ship to dock at the port of Valencia. The ship has been holding in international waters between Italy and Malta after both those governments refused it permission to land," the Doctors Without Borders team operating the ship, the Aquarius, said. Many of the rescued migrants, most of them from Africa, suffered from injuries and that there are more than 100 children aboard. Reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome is following the story and gives us an update. She spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson.
Well, Spain on Monday said it would accept a boat of 629 migrants who have been stranded in the Mediterranean after Italy and Malta refused to let the vessel dock in their ports. The Prime Minister of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, has said in a statement that it's Spain's obligation to help to avoid a humanitarian catastrophe and offer a safe port to these people. So they will be travelling on this boat, the Aquarius, that's run by Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, and they will be allowed to dock in the Spanish port of Valencia. So it is a welcome release for these migrants who have been drifting at sea, waiting for a country to accept them.
What caused the problem that forced the ship to drift at sea?
Well, what we've seen now is a new government come into power in Italy, two populist parties dominated by the right-wing anti-immigrant League Party. And the new interior minister is the leader of that party, Matteo Salvini. He has taken a very hard line on migrants, saying Italy is being forced to bear too much of the burden of accepting migrants and other European countries need to do more. So he refused to accept this ship after the Italian Coast Guard had intervened to help coordinate rescues of six different vessels in the Mediterranean. And then he wanted Malta to accept the boat, and Malta refused to let the vessel dock in any Maltese ports. So we had this standoff situation. And this new minister, Salvini, is also tweeting and using Facebook to really make some very provocative, xenophobic statements saying Italy has had enough, we don't want any more migrants, and we are now ready to close the ports to anyone who is not a legitimate asylum seeker.
What is the likely result of this crisis? Is the EU likely to move forward on finding a better way to handle the migrant problem?
Well, just a short time ago, the Interior Minister, Matteo Salvini, was claiming this as a victory for Italy and Italians. But he said he used the analogy of almost a football match, saying this is just, the game's not over yet. This is just a small part of the overall picture. And we have another boat, according to Mr. Salvini, off the coast of Libya, also with hundreds of migrants supposedly on board, run by the German NGO Sea-Watch. And he claimed that that vessel is heading towards Italy. So this is now the season for Mediterranean transfers, and we often see an influx at this time of year. He is basically drawing the line and saying this cannot continue. So he is demanding a different reaction from the European Union and from other European countries. It remains to be seen whether he gets that result, but he's certainly adamant he's going to close the ports to any new arrivals, and he wants to clamp down on people traffickers.
Reporter Josephine McKenna speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson.
Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni has called for a ban on hooded jackets following the murder of a legislator by assassins who sprayed him with bullets. Eyewitnesses say the assassins rode motorcycles and wore hooded jackets. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Ugandan legislator Ibrahim Abiriga was shot to death Friday as he was approaching his home about 10 kilometers outside Kampala. Witnesses said hooded men on motorcycles intercepted Abiriga's car. Abiriga has been known for always donning yellow clothing in display of support for his party, the ruling National Resistance Movement. While he was not universally popular, he wielded enough influence that he could sometimes speak out on issues that others would rather sweep under the carpet. No suspects have been identified, and police have not said anything about a possible motive in the murder. At Abiriga's burial Monday, the visibly angry Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni promised to pursue the killers.
Why do you kill an elected leader of the people of Uganda? I am sad, I am angry, but I'm confident. We are going to defeat these people, and they have opened the war, they have killed our people, they are going to see what the NRM means in war. All those people who have been sending threatening messages on the social media, we're going to go for them. Why doesn't the NRM kill the MPs of the opposition? Do you know who know how to fight more than the other? If you start a war with NRM, you will lose.
Museveni wants to ban hooded jackets, which he says have hampered the search for the killers.
Like these who killed Abiriga, they were using a simple technique, putting on a jacket with a hood. Why do you allow these people putting on hoods to move around? Because this is just a simple way to do bad things, so but you are not seen and you move away quickly. So we are going to ban putting this hood of jacket when you are driving or you are on a bike.
Museveni has reiterated the government's proposal to install CCTV cameras on highways across the entire country. He also directed that electronically monitored devices should be mounted on all cars and motorcycles to enable security agencies to track them down. However, some legislators condemned Museveni's proposed security measures. Felix Okot-Ogong is one such legislator.
He talked about cameras, and you can't install cameras everywhere. Because Ugandans are dying everywhere. People are attacking them everywhere. So you can't only be planning for people who are on the streets here. So I think the president should come out with an holistic methods or measures that he's going to use.
The shooting comes just in the wake of an unexplained new wave of murders and kidnaps across Uganda. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
In more news from Uganda, fishermen in that country have been complaining about persistent attacks by their Congolese counterparts on Lake Albert for the past 6 months. The situation has paralyzed business. With each attack, Ugandan traders lose money and property to errant Congolese fishermen. They are now calling for the intervention of both the Ugandan and the DRC governments to solve the problem. Catherine Nambi again files this report from Kampala.
Just last week, armed soldiers from the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, crossed over to Sebigoro landing site in Uganda's Hoima district and robbed boats, engines and fishing nets. But the property was returned thanks to the intervention of local authorities in Uganda and police. Robert Ngabidano is the officer in charge of Marine Police at Sebigoro landing site.
Those engines which were robbed on the second day were all returned. Yeah, free of charge. They did not charge us this time because of the pressure we mounted on them. And when we contacted one of the authorities, the other side, they allowed our people to go and pick their properties.
This is just one incident. But for the past 6 months, many Ugandan fishermen have been subjected to arrest, extortion, and theft of their fishing gear and merchandise as they go about their trade. It is reported that Congolese fishermen connive with DRC soldiers and cross to the Ugandan side of Lake Albert, where they arrest fishermen and confiscate their property. The Congolese fishermen allegedly ask for a ransom of between $500 to $800 to release the people and their property. The Uganda traders have now abandoned the trade for fear of the attacks. Isaac Amati is a transporter of fish to DRC.
Actually, the business which we are doing, this side is not good. Because when we wanted to cross this side of Congo, those Congolese, they can disturb us. When we need to branch that side, they can arrest us with our boats and the engines, our goods. We are not fearing to pass that side.
James Wanan is a Ugandan trader who often uses Lake Albert to cross to DRC. He says those who are attempting to cross to DRC ensure they are in company of at least one Congolese for safety.
At the moment, if some Congolese is among us, we can do the business because they are related to those people. Sometimes they can interchange words with them. Through them, we can do that business. But if we alone, we are scared.
Geoffrey Kumakech is a local council leader in Buseruka, one of the affected sub-counties in Uganda. He says the local government revenues have dwindled due to the attacks.
As a district and sub-county, we are getting even problem, more especially on local revenue, because there are taxes or revenue we get from these fishermen, talks of user fee, so that the district and the sub-county can also run its daily activities.
Kumakech is calling for an immediate intervention from the central government to stem the rampant attacks.
We are appealing to the central government that they need to respond to counterattack this, because now it is too much. Congolese are provoking Ugandans, so we are appealing to the security personnel. Come and counterattack, because the officer who is here of Marine cannot afford the patrol because of the logistics. Through the Minister of Internal Affairs and the Minister of Security to give the necessary requirement to these people so that they can intensify the patrol on the water.
Pius Wakabi is a member of parliament from Uganda's Hoima district. He says the government seems to be acting at a snail's pace regarding the matter.
I raised the same issue in the parliament, and the speaker had tasked the Minister for Security to come with a statement. Up to now, the minister has not surfaced in parliament to come up with a clear statement. But what is here on ground? It is serious. Almost 80% of the boats are just packed. People are fearing to go and fish.
Isaac Kawoya is the resident district commissioner of Hoima district. He says the government of Uganda is in talks with their DRC counterparts to find a solution.
We are in touch with one of the immigration officials from the other side to see how best to sort out the challenges on the borderline and about the fishing regulations and guidelines.
Fishermen from Kaiso, Chehoro, Mbegu, Chijanji and Sebigoro landing sites in Kabuya and Buseruka sub-counties in Hoima district often take fish to Chomia, Kasenyi and Bunia fish markets in DRC. Authorities of both countries have agreed to conduct joint operations to stem the confrontations between the fishermen on the shared lake, but so far little action seems to have been taken. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The International Labour Organization reports that 152 million children are victims of child labour, with nearly half forced to work in hazardous, unhealthy conditions that can result in death and injury. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva in advance of the World Day Against Child Labour tomorrow on explorations of a panel of experts on tackling the causes of child labour.
20 years ago, hundreds of people, including children, participated in the global march against child labor. They came to the International Labor Conference in Geneva demanding a convention on the elimination of the worst forms of child labor. Basu Rai from Nepal was the youngest of the marchers. Now a grown man, he recalls clambering on tabletops, chanting slogans.
Go, go, global march, stop, stop, child labor. We want education, no more tools in tiny hands. We want books and we want toys.
Rai was orphaned at age 4. Homeless and without anyone to look after him, he became a street gangster, a rag picker, a delivery boy. He did anything to survive. Now, as an adult, he has become a child rights activist.
But still, like, I'm afraid because I'm a father to a 2-month-old daughter. And then because the world is not safe for the children. So this is our collective responsibility to work together for the sake of the childhood. But still there are 152 million children who are languishing in the kind of the slavery.
Kailash Satyarthi, an Indian children's rights activist, a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, led the 1998 Global March of Enslaved and Trafficked Children. He says progress has been made since then, but much remains to be done.
If the children are still trapped into supply chain, if the children are still enslaved, if the children are still sold and bought like animals and sometimes in lesser than the price of animals to work in fields and farms and shops and factories or for household work as domestic help, this is a blot on humanity.
The ILO reports nearly half of the child laborers are found in Africa and in the Asia and Pacific regions. Sub-Saharan Africa has the largest proportion, with 1 in 5 children working. It notes children typically enter the workforce at the age of 6 or 7, getting involved in hazardous work as they get older. About 70% of hazardous work is concentrated in agriculture. Other forms include mining, construction, and domestic service. ILO Director General Guy Ryder says the world is facing an epidemic of occupational accidents and disease.
Honestly, the annual toll is appalling. 2.78 million work-related deaths, 374 million injuries and illnesses. If these were the victims of a war, we'd be talking a lot about it. Children and young workers are at greater risk and suffer disproportionately and with longer-lasting consequences.
Ryder says legislation, labor inspection, and workplace labor relations and practices must be strengthened to stop this carnage. Most child laborers are in the developing world, but this shameful practice also occurs in some of the world's richest countries. Zulima Lopez, a child rights activist and labor relations student in the United States, recalls her life as a child.
At the age of 7, it was normal for me to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, put on my shoes, put on a t-shirt, and go work in the hot sun, burning, my back was aching, 20, 30 pounds of buckets of cucumbers next to me, trying to make ends meet.
Lopez says people do not realize what is happening in their own backyard. She calls the exploitative work that robs children of their childhood unacceptable and says it must stop. She says children are the future, and if people fail to protect the world's children, then there is little hope for the future. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's music time in Africa.
Music fans will recognize the introduction for Voice of America's Music Time in Africa. It epitomizes the sounds found across the continent by Leo Sarkisian, who created the program. He died Friday at age 97 and is being mourned by listeners and co-workers. Known as the Music Man of Africa, Sarkisian spent a half century traveling Africa, listening to musicians and giving them a global stage. Heather Maxwell succeeded Sarkisian as host of Music Time in Africa, VOA's longest-running English program. She recalls him as a true gentleman who loved the beautiful things in life and loved talking to people. Sarkisian went to Africa as a U.S. Army soldier. In 1961, Edward R. Murrow, director of the U.S. Information Agency, visited him in Guinea and asked if he'd like to join VOA. 4 years later, Leo Sarkisian went on the air with Music Time in Africa. He spent the next 47 years traveling the continent with his wife, Mary. Sarkisian was himself a musician and artist. He sketched performers, audience members, and dignitaries. But his greatest legacy may be the collection of about 10,000 recordings that he curated, representing every African country. Former VOA director David Jackson described the depth of that collection.
Well, you know, it took a lifetime to accumulate that music, and it really is a priceless collection of indigenous music that's unfortunately at times it's hard to hear in Africa itself, except for the efforts of people like Leo.
The University of Michigan is digitizing and preserving the recordings. Sarkisian retired at 91. His knowledge and passion for African music guarantee that his work lives on. Next, listen to the music man, Leo Sarkisian, doing what he loves best on air, introducing African music.
Well, no program of Cameroonian music can be complete without including an example of the wonderful xylophone music played by different regional folkloric troupes. This example is the South Central province of the country, and the dance music is from the ethnic group called Beti.
The UN Children's Fund warns that heavy rains and flooding in Somalia are putting hundreds of thousands of children at high risk of disease and death. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
This year's rainy season in Somalia has brought welcome relief to a population that has suffered from 4 years of poor rains and drought that have pushed some areas to the brink of famine. However, these long-hoped-for rains have now turned into a disastrous situation of heavy flooding, widespread displacement, and the prospect of disease outbreaks. The UN Children's Fund reports about half of the 230,000 people who have been displaced by floods since April are children. It says people are living in congested, unsanitary conditions that breed disease. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouyrak warns acutely malnourished children living under such conditions are at great risk of falling ill and dying.
The rains spread diseases that are particularly deadly for malnourished children with exhausted, fragile immune systems. While we have not seen a spike yet, the risk of further outbreak is high and compounded by flooding.
UNICEF reports acute malnutrition rates among displaced children have exceeded the emergency threshold of 15% and have reached as high as 21%. The agency has treated more than 88,000 severely acutely malnourished children with special life-saving therapeutic feeding this year. Bouyrak says the lives of many more malnourished children could be saved if UNICEF gets the money it needs to help them. So far, he notes, the prospects are not good. He says UNICEF has received barely 30% of this year's $155 million humanitarian appeal. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Paul Alexander. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Bill Androdi, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Ethiopian lawmakers have lifted the controversial state of emergency imposed across the country 3 months ago. We'll examine the most significant reform so far by the country's new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.